What's up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week, Shopify.com. Now, can we talk about notifications for a second? Who actually leaves those sounds on anymore? Well, okay, wait, besides that kind, because that sound means another sale on Shopify. Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify makes it easy to sell to anyone from anywhere. So whether you're looking for vintage tees or recipes for ghee, you can start selling with Shopify and join the platform, simplifying commerce for millions of your favorite businesses worldwide. With Shopify, you can create an online store that jives with your vibe, discover new customers, and grow the following that keeps them coming back. In fact, myself, Sam, and Johnny have all used Shopify at various points, and we highly recommend it. And if you want to check it out for yourself, you can get a free trial right now when you go to shopify.com/ilab. That's shopify.com/ilab. Now, it's important that the ilab is all lowercase, so you can start selling online today by checking out shopify.com/ilab. I'm going to tell you even more about Shopify during the break in the show, but for now, let's kick off this episode of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Welcome back, bosses. Episode 256 here. I'm with Derek. We're going to be talking about crypto, whether you like it or not. It's a mess. It's worth talking about, Derek.
All right, before we get into that,
how much worse is the bleeding?
We're gonna get into that. Let's just have some nice moments at first. Where are you at, first of all? I think you're back in Barcelona.
Oh, you mean nice moments, because we're talking crypto on this episode, and after this, directly after, we're doing a metaverse portfolio update.
it's been a rough year. Thankfully, it's almost over.
How could you pack more depression into one day for me, Derek?
If you're just catching this now, bosses, and you're not a member of Patreon, Sam and I are going to record a Patreon exclusive little update. So if you want to hear our pain about the losses we've suffered in the metaverse, you can check it out now, patreon.com/investlikeaboss.
I will say, at least we get to record these episodes and I get to drink wine while you're drinking coffee. I wouldn't want to be drinking coffee right now to go into these subjects. It's more of a wine topic.
This is the problem. I need to be on the other side of the world. Maybe I need to go to Asia while you guys are in Europe. I can be in Asia and then I can have the advantage going forward.
Hey man, I got to say, you sound pretty good on that new setup you got, that new podcast studio is good investment.
It's going good. I'm digging it. I figured, you know, all my other investments are going to shit, so I might as well make something that could pay off.
Hey, you're not planning to expense that on the company account, are you?
That's why I created my own company to do that.
It's kind of an inside joke between Derek and I, because last time Johnny and I met up, I tried to put like a $40 dinner on the company for the three of us after Derek flew from California to the Ukraine and I flew from Spain to Ukraine, and Johnny basically like blew up on me at dinner about trying to expense a team dinner.
And in front of listeners. It was a good time.
In front of Patreons, nevertheless. Patreons that were there will be laughing their ass off at that. So you said you had some good news to talk about, right?
I think it's good news. And it is related to who we're going to talk about. So before I say that, let's just talk about who we're talking to. I found this guy on Twitter. He's got a pretty big following and he's kind of representative of Bitcoin altogether, I think, because I still view Bitcoin as like this mysterious thing. You know, it's created by this Satoshi guy. No one knows who he is. Or even if it's a man, it could be a woman for all we know. Or our guest today could be Satoshi. I don't know, because I don't know his identity, his true identity. Mm-hmm. All I know is he's British, which you'll hear. He says he used to work in real estate, but now he's completely focused on Bitcoin. He's called Bitcoin Gandalf. I've seen him do some interviews on YouTube.
and he was on video, and he wears like the whole Gandalf get up. No one really knows what this guy looks like.
I don't even know what Gandalf looks like. I just know he's on in the Lord of the Rings.
Like just a wizard. Think of a wizard with a huge wizard. Beard. Yeah.
Okay. That's odd.
A little strange.
Is he covering his like identity totally?
Yeah. So I was hoping to actually see the whole getup, but he refused to actually turn the video screen on for me. We just did audio only. I thought maybe I could see the outfit, but I didn't even get that.
And what's the purpose of hiding the identity? Is he like some massive Bitcoin whale that just doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want people to know he's got money? Or
I tried to get that out of him, and it wasn't completely clear, honestly. I think he does well in the space, but you know, maybe he just doesn't want to get made fun of because people think this Bitcoin stuff is not real. And I think in light of recent events, there's some more legitimacy to staying away from Bitcoin, I think, in a lot of people's minds.
Well, one thing I've really appreciated with this crypto collapse is that now when you meet people, they tell you what their real job is instead of saying they're a crypto investor.
That's funny. Oh,
I work at the restaurant down the street, or you know, it's like every 17-year-old on up was saying they were a crypto investor going back pre-burst. So
yeah, everyone's a genius when it's going up.
Yeah. No. Not anymore.
Yeah.
The pain is real.
There's some real pain out there, which we'll talk about after the interview. I do want to leave you on this little cliffhanger, though, Sam. So what I did yesterday was something I didn't think I'd really do. But in light of recent events, I just on a whim, I've been thinking about it a little bit after this interview with Gandalf. And I no longer own any cryptocurrency.
You sold out everything?
Everything.
At the bottom. Hopefully
everything
the bottom.
Is in cash right now.
So it's gone.
Essentially.
You realized losses.
That's part of the reasoning is we're coming up on the end of the year and it is a tax write-off.
Yeah.
but I'm going to need some of your advice, Sam. So let's get into this interview, and then I have a question for you about what to do with these funds when we come back.
So for all the listeners, we're going to talk about the FTX implosion, which is, I think we're all labeling it a scam at this point. And believe it or not, I didn't actually know about this until Derek was like, hey, we got to do an episode on the FTX implosion. And then I started looking it up. So I was super excited to hear this episode. It's massive news it's got massive repercussions for crypto as a whole, confidence, crypto going forward, legislation, everything. I learned a lot on this episode. Really good interview. Looking forward to chatting about it in the outro, Derek.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. I get into FTX, of course, and also some safe ways that you bosses that didn't sell all your crypto can possibly store your coins to make them more secure. So let's jump into the interview. Once again, his name is Bitcoin Gandalf. Here we go.
This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Shopify.com. Now, I want to tell you guys about my personal story with Shopify. Now, I'm sure most of you out there had all kinds of crazy business ideas when you were coming up. So did I. I sold like everything. I'm talking sunglasses, candles, bicycles. Everything. I thought I could sell it and be rich overnight. Well, guess what? None of that worked. In fact, I didn't have a successful e-commerce campaign until I actually used Shopify. Now, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that I worked in the music business, and what better place to sell merch for your fans than online? That's when I found Shopify, and we were able to create a hefty side revenue for our artists and hence for our business who manage those artists. Shopify was so easy and straightforward. In minutes, you can have an online store up and running, and then you'll be hearing this sound. multiple times a day. If you want to check it out now, there is a free trial going on. All you got to do is go to shopify.com/ilab. That's shopify.com/ilab. Make sure that ilab is all lowercase. One more time, get your free trial today at shopify.com/ilab.
Welcome back to Invest Like a Boss. I have a guest this week that it's not the first time it's happened, but it's pretty rare that we have a guest that says, I don't want to be revealed to who I actually am. So we're calling him Bitcoin Gandalf because that's what everyone else calls him. And he is going to talk all about Bitcoin, the crypto space, obviously this collapse with FTX. But first, I mean, I have to ask, since I really don't know what you look like, Gandalf, why the Gandalf? Any significance to your, I guess, character, would you call it?
Yeah, so firstly, let me say thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be here and talk about everything that's been happening and about Bitcoin. So yeah, the reason for Gandalf is interesting. The first time I heard, or the first time that I properly started paying attention to Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general was back in 2017.
I think a lot of people got introduced to it around that time.
Yeah. And we can talk about what I thought about it at the time, but that's the first time I started to pay attention to it. And so what I did is I went on Twitter and I followed a bunch of people that seemed to be tweeting about cryptocurrency. And one of those people was, he's now known as Kobe, but back then he was Crypto Cobain. And so fast forward to end of 2020, 2021, when I sort of really started to understand Bitcoin, I became obsessed and it's all I could think and talk about. And I didn't want to tweet about it from my Twitter account with my real name because I used to be in the real estate industry. So I didn't want to be talking about Bitcoin when I was like connected with everyone in the real estate industry and previously talking about real estate. So I made this sort of pseudonym to be able to tweet about Bitcoin. And I based it on, you know, Crypto Cobain was Crypto Kurt Cobain. And I just went for a Bitcoin Gandalf.
Nice. So that is interesting because if you came for the real estate space, I would think that a lot of people that are heavily invested into real estate didn't really believe in Bitcoin and it kind of like hurt your legitimacy in the business, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, it seems to me that most people that aren't in the Bitcoin space or in the cryptocurrency space in general, you know, the mainstream belief is that it's some sort of scam or it's a Ponzi scheme or it has no intrinsic value, which I guess these are all sorts of things that we can address later on. But I think that's the general gist. And events like the FTX collapse reinforce that narrative for a lot of people that don't understand the space.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of our listeners are very progressive and open to new investments, but we actually just did a call with a lot of our Patreon listeners recently, and a lot of them were still very skeptical on Bitcoin and any cryptocurrency for that matter. And these are, you know, essentially younger people that are open to new investments, and even they're a little skittish right now. So it's an interesting market. Before we jump into the FTX collapse, you chose Gandalf. You know, you said you needed a persona. Why Gandalf? I'm just curious.
So I'm not like a huge Lord of the Rings fan, but I do like Lord of the Rings. And I always like the wizard in anything because he's like the most powerful one out of the lot. So that's why I went with Gandalf.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So we're recording this in November of 2022. The FTX collapse, you know, I guess about a month out now, but there's still it seems like daily things are unpacking about how, you know, unorganized this company was, how poorly run it was. Is this indicative of the crypto space in general? Should we be worried about any of these other sites that are holding cryptocurrency? And have you seen practices that are similar to what FTX is doing and that we should watch out for?
I mean, historically, there's been mismanagement and just gross negligence / fraudulent behavior in the cryptocurrency space and in any space, really. I think it might be helpful to first frame this as it's a black swan event. It's not the norm in terms of exchanges. So I think it's harsh to paint the entire space with the FTX brush because what's happened here is just a blatant blatant fraud and theft of customer funds and some really, really bad corporate governance and negligence and incompetence and hubris. So, you know, I wouldn't paint every exchange with that brush. Having said that, one of the innovations that Bitcoin brought about was that it gives holders the ability to self-custody a digital asset. Mm-hmm. And so by using centralized services like a centralized exchange or giving up control of your keys to some third party, you're negating one of the major innovations that Bitcoin brought to the world.
It is very interesting. It's a decentralized currency, but people are still using centralized financial systems to acquire it. I'm curious. I thankfully did not have any investments inside FTX. Did you, or did you have any personal experience with anybody that maybe worked for FTX?
No. So I grew up in Hong Kong, and FTX was once upon a time based in Hong Kong. And I had a friend who was in a Regis type service office. Mm-hmm. And that's where Alameda /and/or FTX had a little private office there as well. So I had a friend who, you know, frequently said, oh, I know, I see SBF all the time and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I never used FTX. And I don't have any friends that work there. It was a very small company in terms of headcount. One of the things you'll hear other now that the sort of the fraud has been exposed, you're seeing like Brian Armstrong, the CEO of Coinbase, Jesse Powell, the ex-CEO of Kraken, now chairman of Kraken, come out and say that for them, it was very strange how much money Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX were throwing about, because obviously running their own exchanges, they know how much money they make based on the trading volumes of the exchange. So FTX's trading volumes didn't really add up to how much money they claimed they had. But there's this other part of the puzzle, which is Alameda Research, which is like a quantitative trading hedge fund that was also owned by Sam Bankman-Fried, who is the CEO of FTX. And I think everyone just assumed that those guys had figured out a way to make a lot of money, and that's where it was all coming from.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at their marketing budget alone, I'm a big sports guy, and I really caught my attention when they bought naming rights to an arena in Miami for an NBA team. And I think that deal was like $150 million. And then, you know, they did Super Bowl commercials, which, you know, are notoriously multi-millions of dollars just for 60 seconds of advertising. You know, Tom Brady, Larry David. I'm trying to think of all the other celebrities that were on there too. The people that are not cheap to get deals with, and they spent so much money. It had to have raised some red flags, you know, a year or two ago even.
Yeah. I think everyone thought this guy was like some whiz kid, and so they gave him the benefit of the doubt. And one of the mantras in Bitcoin is don't trust, verify. Right. But even Satoshi Nakamoto, the pseudonymous individual or group that created Bitcoin, they sort of disappeared just to make sure that people wouldn't fall for the trap of the cult of personality. Because imagine if Satoshi was still around today tweeting and on the forums, there would still be people who sort of like trust him. And he created this thing that is, I wouldn't say fully trustless, but I would say it's trust minimized, right? It's about as little trust as you need to put into any single person in a system that exists.
So I'm curious, I didn't really look too deep into this because, like I said, it didn't personally affect me. Do you know what happens to anybody that was holding funds within FTX? Is that just gone? It's a full write-off. Do you know, is there a potential to get some of it back later?
I mean, I haven't looked at the specific numbers, but it does seem like they have lost the majority of the funds trading or giving them to Alameda Research, the sort of related entity via Sam Bankman-Fried owning both companies. For example, they have like $1.8 billion worth of Bitcoin liabilities and zero Bitcoin that they hold, right? And this is one of the things, like, if you're trusting, not verifying, there is a chance, however small it may be, that you don't actually have Bitcoin. You're essentially it's like a bank, right? They were running a fractional reserve crypto exchange bank. You deposit your Bitcoin there. They're doing whatever it is behind the you know, behind the scenes. And if they lose it all, there's no Federal Reserve to print more money and come bail them out.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because, you know, think of a bank account. You have a balance in there, but technically that money's not just sitting behind the counter somewhere saying, you know, this is Gandalf's pile of cash. They're using that money for other purposes. So,
yeah. But I mean, what happened, you know, when there's a crisis of confidence in an institution like a bank, you know, bank runs happen. You know, Northern Rock in the UK in 2008 had a bank run because there was fear they were going to go bankrupt. And of course, if you're only insured, you know, in the US, I think it's FDIC. I can't remember what it is in the UK, but you're only insured up to a certain amount. And then the rest, you know, the bank owes you money. You're accredited to the bank. And the people who deposit funds in a cryptocurrency exchange, no matter what the cryptocurrency exchange tells you, in most cases, unless you're paying a custodian a fee specifically to custody your cryptocurrency or Bitcoin or whatever it is that you hold, you're basically a unsecured creditor. You're the bottom rung of, if they declare bankruptcy, like the bondholders, if there is any, will get paid first. Probably some of the equity holders will get paid back first. You're the bottom of the pile.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Mt. Gox situation, but one of our co-hosts, Sam, actually held, I think it was close, at least at Bitcoin's peak, over $1 million in Bitcoin. And he's getting like less than 10% of this. And the process took almost 10 years to even get it. So I wouldn't hold your breath if you had any balances in FTX about getting into that later down the road.
Yeah. Mt. Gox, I think, ended up after they sort of halted withdrawals and they were hacked a couple of times over a few years. They thought they had lost about 850,000 Bitcoin, which is in Bitcoin terms, it's a much larger amount than is going down with FTX. But in dollar terms now, because everything has gone up so much in price,
right,
obviously the overall dollar value of the FTX collapse is larger. But Mt. Gox eventually ended up finding 200,000 Bitcoin in an old wallet that hadn't been stolen. And so I think they're still in the process of doling out those Bitcoins to some of the creditors. But I don't think anyone's received any money yet. It's every year it's like,
I think he got confirmed that he will get it soon. So I think within the next year or so. But yeah, I think it's been close to 10 years. So
yeah, it was 2014. So it's 8 years in the making.
Yep.
Of this. Yeah. But I mean, these guys have been forced to hodl Bitcoin from, you know, whatever it was, $100 or $300 or whatever it was back then to, well, 69,000 at the peak, but slightly lower now.
Exactly. I said, look on the bright side. You know, you could have sold Bitcoin when it hit $500. You never know. So yeah, hold on to it.
Most people don't hold on for a 2,000 bagger.
Sure.
Right.
So let's talk about SBF, as everybody likes to call him, Sam Bankman-Fried. Do you think he's going to get charged and face prison? I mean, it seems almost inevitable to me.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, people talk about, oh, he's in the Bahamas or whatever, but if the U.S. wants to get you, they'll get you wherever it is in the world. They'll partner up with whatever country. They'll put whatever pressure they need to put on, you know, diplomatically, and they'll get you. So it's very hard to run away. Look at Julian Assange. Look at the founders of BitMEX, the another crypto exchange. Yeah, they'll get you.
Yeah, I think it's just inevitable. Let's talk about ways that you can protect, you know, your cryptocurrency. So even if you didn't have money in FTX, a lot of people are nervous, you know, is my Bitcoin safe? Is any other of my cryptocurrencies safe for that matter? Are there exchanges out there that you think can be trusted to hold your crypto in? Is something like a Coinbase that is, you know, a publicly traded company, a safer bet than an FTX where it's easier to hide accounting practices?
I mean, I think obviously there is a spectrum of ones that are I'll assign probabilities to these types of things rather than saying one is safe and one is unsafe. I think there are exchanges out there that are likely to be good actors and have you know, more robust corporate governance, security practices, and are audited, and you know, they quite possibly are not rehypothecating your funds. But the beauty of Bitcoin is that you don't have to even get into trying to assess that risk and learn about which ones are doing things right and which one is doing are doing things wrong, because you can just take control of your own Bitcoin, take custody of it by holding your own keys. You know, if you can write down 12 or 24 words on a piece of paper or engrave them on some steel and hide them somewhere safe, then you can self-custody your own Bitcoin. And you don't need to get into this whole like, oh, is Coinbase trustworthy? Is Kraken trustworthy?
Sure. So let's talk about that process, because I think it's just so easy to buy from, you know, a Coinbase, a Gemini, FTX when it was viable, that you just held it there and you assumed that it was safe. I think a lot of people newer to this space are realizing that probably wasn't the best idea. So can you walk around the process of utilizing a cold storage wallet, or how best to store this Bitcoin so it is decentralized?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is all a trade-off between security and convenience, right? So a lot of it will depend on how much money you have in cryptocurrency and Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, and how much do you care about losing that amount of money versus how much convenience do you want versus how much security you want. So, you know, if you have, let's say, let's differentiate between a hot wallet, a cold wallet, and third-party custody or a custodial service. So custodial service is somebody else has the keys to your Bitcoin. They are the ones telling you have this much Bitcoin. And when you want to move it, you're essentially, you know, even though you go into Coinbase and you might click send Bitcoin to this other address, what you're really doing is asking Coinbase to sign a transaction on your behalf because they have the keys to the Bitcoin. You can't move it. If Coinbase decides we're not letting you move this Bitcoin for whatever reason, you can't move it. Whereas if you hold your own keys, no one can stop you. So there's having somebody else hold your keys. There's holding your keys on what's called a hot wallet, which is just basically any software wallet that's connected to the internet. So with those, they're very convenient because, you know, you're connected to the internet, you can instantly open an app and send some money somewhere else, and you do hold the keys, but there is a slightly higher chance that you'll get hacked compared to a cold wallet, where it's basically your keys are stored offline. They're not connected to any device that's connected to the internet. So the only way that somebody could steal from you is by physically obtaining your keys.
So for a cold wallet, do you need some type of hardware to do this?
So most people, yeah, they're what's called hardware wallets. You don't necessarily need one, but it's a convenient way of generating your own private keys and wallet addresses and storing your Bitcoin offline.
So the cold storage obviously seems like the safest play here. What do you personally use?
So I think we don't need to get into sort of like which one is better than the other, but you know, there's Trezor, Ledger, which you can hold all sorts of cryptocurrencies, and then there's some Bitcoin only hardware wallets like the Cold Card, which is excellent as well. So it just depends on which ones you have. I know a lot of Bitcoiners who very much believe that Bitcoin is the only cryptocurrency of value and that the rest of them are sort of copies that are trying to affinity scam what Bitcoin has done. Mm-hmm. They like to just use Bitcoin only devices. But yeah, if you're holding some other cryptocurrencies, then Trezor or Ledger support multiple coins. And then your cold card for Bitcoin only would be the ones I would look at initially. Anything that allows you to hold your keys offline is miles better than a hot wallet or than a custodial service, in my opinion.
Let's say I'm holding Bitcoin offline and I'm ready to sell. I need the money for something, or Bitcoin just spiked, whatever it may be. What's the process to get that back online? Because I assume you have to sell it on an exchange to get that.
I mean, you can sell it on an exchange. You can sell it on a centralized exchange, like the ones that we all know of, Coinbase, Kraken, Gemini. You can sell it peer-to-peer. There's peer-to-peer marketplaces like Bisc for Bitcoin or HODL. There's local Bitcoins. So you can find a local Bitcoiner who will buy Bitcoin off you. But yeah, so the process would be, let's just assume that most of your listeners are probably going to use a centralized exchange. So let's just assume they have it on their cold storage wallet. As long as they have the physical device with them, all they need to do is plug that into a computer, and then they sign a transaction sending that Bitcoin to the address that the exchange gives you. And then, you know, if you pay a high enough fee, you'll be included in the next block of transactions, which is within 10 minutes. And then, yeah, your Bitcoin will be on the exchange, and then you can just click sell. And usually it's instant. Most exchanges these days, they execute your trade instantly.
Gotcha. That sounds easy enough. I mean, if you're not one of these daily traders going in and out all the time, personally, I've purchased Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies and haven't sold any, I don't think, for a couple of years now. So it doesn't seem too much of an inconvenience if you're going that route.
Yeah, I mean, of course, yeah, there's traders. So, you know, they might keep some money on exchange because they're trying to trade on some short term volatility or some, you know, price action. And they have, you know, they have certain orders on there and they need to have funds on there. But for the average person, that's just sort of dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin. There's no reason why you need to sort of act very quickly. Yeah, in fact, if you're rushing into either buying or selling, I would stop and think twice about, you know, what's going on. Are you FOMOing in? Are you FOMOing out? Have you really thought this through? I would think about that. But yeah, so it's no more than, let's say, a 10 to 15 minute process to get Bitcoins on or off an exchange.
Awesome. So you are Bitcoin Gandalf. So obviously your biggest coin you support, I assume, has got to be Bitcoin. You kind of alluded to it earlier that you think maybe these other coins are just copies of Bitcoin trying to emulate their success. Let's talk Bitcoin. So is Bitcoin your number one go-to coin?
It's my only go-to coin. I think once you truly understand the purpose of having something like a decentralized blockchain, you understand that there's only one use case for it, and that is for it to be money, right? I think this is why you see a currency like Ethereum, that when it launched, it was very clear, their marketing was very clearly like, we're not trying to be Bitcoin, we're trying to be this world supercomputer, like, you know, the cloud on a blockchain. And they've slowly migrated now where, you know, their meme is that they're ultrasound money. They're trying to basically change the consensus rules of the network to make it a better, in quotation marks, better version of Bitcoin. You know, now it's, you know, the inflation rate of Ethereum is less than Bitcoin, and they change the security and you can earn this yield. And that means that it's going to impact the supply of Ethereum, which hopefully pumps up the price. But in my opinion, there's once you learn about blockchain, you learn about the trade-offs that are necessary to change the qualities of Bitcoin. You understand that Bitcoin is perfected, not to say that it's perfect, but it has the right balance of trade-offs for me, where I feel comfortable storing my life's wealth in it and betting that, you know, my purchasing power is going to go up over time, over a long enough time frame, and that Bitcoin will ultimately be the winner in its category.
That's a very good point. You are seeing other use cases for these other currencies out there, but the use case for Bitcoin has stayed the same its entire existence. So maybe it's more of a marketing play on these other coins, and Bitcoin is just out there doing its thing.
Yeah, and you know, these a lot of the other coins, there's a founder, there's a foundation, there's a company behind them. They're not really decentralized. They're just using these terms, these buzzwords, because of what's happened with Bitcoin, right? Like, you know, people hear about how it used to be $1, and then it's 20,000, then it's 69,000, and everyone wants that, right? Everyone wants to get rich. But in the other coins, the people who are really getting rich are the ones who are selling you the coin.
Exactly.
Right? So
let's talk prices. Bitcoin has dropped to a 2-year low around $16,000. A significant piece of that has been since this FTX announcement in the last month. I think it was hovering around 20,000 or so. Now it's about 16 as we record this. Do you foresee it dropping more with these people getting scared and getting out of the market?
Well, it's quite funny because I think with what happened back in May with, you know, the Luna crash and then 3 Arrows Capital going bankrupt and all that, Celsius, you know, miners have been capitulating. I don't think that I think all the people who are going to sell because of the panic have already sold. I think we're seeing like we've exhausted sellers. The only thing that could potentially we could potentially see like some Bitcoin coming on the market is one, Mt. Gox. So anyone that's been holding, forced holding coins from Mt. Gox, 200,000 coins coming back on the market sometime in the next year or two, that could have an impact depending on how many people sell. the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but the parent company of Grayscale, it is called Digital Currency Group. They have a subsidiary called Genesis Trading, which has another subsidiary called Genesis Capital Capital Trading, I think. Anyway, that is basically, they're like a crypto loan company. So they've been loaning out lots of money and lost a lot of money in FTX. And with the prices of all cryptocurrencies coming down, they're now in the hole and may declare bankruptcy. And the parent company may potentially, there's some talk, I don't know how likely this is to happen, of the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust basically allowing redemptions, so allowing shareholders to redeem the Bitcoin that the trust holds. And then you could see some people selling that Bitcoin. You could see the parent company, DCG, owns shares of Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. You could see them allow redemptions so they themselves can get some Bitcoin and then sell that to try and save Genesis.
Very interesting. So if the accumulation of those events occurs and let's say Bitcoin drops even further, is there a magic number to potentially really get concerned? Let's say Bitcoin drops below $10,000 US. Is that something that would really make you nervous about the future of Bitcoin?
I mean, no, because Bitcoin worked with when it was worth $0. So it will work forever. I'd be concerned if I was buying Bitcoin with the hopes of doing something with that money tomorrow or next year. But as a very, very long-term savings vehicle, and that's how I look at it. I don't look at it as an investment. You know, I think investments are stuff like something that maybe produces some cash flow where you can do some, you know, crunch some numbers and have some accounts and figure out some present value of some future expected cash flow. So I just look at Bitcoin as money. When I save in fiat currency, I don't think I'm investing in the pound or investing in the dollar. I think I'm saving money. And that's how I look at Bitcoin itself. So I'm not too concerned about what happens in the short run. Bitcoin will produce blocks even if it's worth $0. Of course, if you're buying it with the purposes of thinking you're going to double your money tomorrow or next year, who knows? It could happen. Anything could happen. Bitcoin is crazy and it's done crazy things both ways. So nothing's out of the probability scales.
So what do you think happens to these countries like El Salvador who embrace Bitcoin and actually recognize them as an official currency in their country? I read the other day that El Salvador is now seeking cash from China to help prevent an economic crash, which just sounds like a terrible idea all around. any thoughts on these economies that have embraced Bitcoin and put them into their actual currencies? And would this kind of recent events scare away other countries that were maybe eyeing this idea as well?
I mean, it's potentially. I think if the recent events scare you, you're probably looking looking at Bitcoin the wrong way. If you're hoping that it's going to be some economic savior for your country in the next year or two, because you put some on your balance sheet and then that means you can pay off your debts, your bonds that are maturing next year, like you're looking at it wrong. I think Bitcoin's a way for a lot of countries that depend on the US dollar to not have to depend on it anymore without having to issue their own currency. So that's what El Salvador is. El Salvador is a dollarized country. The dollar is a legal tender there, and now Bitcoin is legal tender there. And I think the president there understands what Bitcoin does, and he's in it for the long run. In terms of the amount of money that they've spent buying Bitcoin, it's nothing. It's tens of millions of dollars, and El Salvador's GDP is 28 billion. The government's tax revenues are somewhere in the 6 billion range. They just bought back bonds that were maturing next year, $525 million worth of bonds that were maturing next year. They've just bought those back. So they seem to be in good shape. As to what dealings they have with China and stuff, I've seen some article, I've read a headline, but I don't know it closely. And I do know that the mainstream media loves to sort of hate on Bitcoin and hate on El Salvador because of their sort of Bitcoin strategy. So I would take that with a grain of salt.
Right. So speaking of China, I want to say about two or three years ago or so, they imposed some pretty strict regulations on Bitcoin and mining and just the cryptocurrency space. I know you're in the UK, but do you foresee any U.S. government intervention into some of these practices, especially considering the FTX deal. It seems like a good opportunity for a politician to kind of get their name out there by cracking down on this stuff and posing it as a potential scam, even though we don't feel that way. I think I feel like this is a good opportunity for a politician to step in and kind of look like a hero.
Yeah, I mean, FTX, in my opinion, is a clear scam, and some other cryptocurrencies are also clear scams. Bitcoin falls into a different bucket, and I think the US is fortunate in that it has some politicians, and sort of Bitcoin has enough weight with enough people that it's very likely that it gets put in a separate bucket. I think there will be a lot of other cryptocurrencies that will be deemed unregistered securities offerings or unregistered securities. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens to those. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but Gary Gensler, the SEC chairman, taught the sort of blockchain class at MIT. So he's very familiar with the innovation that is Bitcoin and the sort of gray area in which a lot of other tokens live.
Yeah, I think it's I think the fact that it survived this long without deep regulation has to say that there are some people at a high level that do understand this, thankfully.
Yeah, so Cynthia Loomis, I think she's the senator from Wyoming. She's a strong advocate of Bitcoin. There is a couple of others. Their names escape me now. But of course, there's also politicians that are very anti-Bitcoin. Elizabeth Warren's not a huge fan. Donald Trump's not a huge fan. So it'll be interesting to see them duke it out. Bitcoin mining's become a huge industry in the U.S., particularly in places like Texas, Georgia, Wyoming. So there's citizen banning or any sort of regulation that would negatively affect that industry would be bad for a lot of the people in those states, and so there would be a lot of political pressure on the leaders of those states to be for Bitcoin. Ted Cruz is another one. He's spoken at a few Bitcoin conferences, and he's very much understands the benefits that Bitcoin's having in a state like Texas.
Well, I'm glad you brought up mining, because Bitcoin is due for another halving event in, I guess, a little bit over a year, March 2024. Can you tell us what happens when Bitcoin halves and how it affects prices? What's the actual process of it occurring?
Yeah, so the halving refers to the what's called the block subsidy. So right now, the way the network incentivizes miners to do the work necessary to mine blocks is by number one, they receive transaction fees from everyone that's using Bitcoin. When I send a transaction on chain, I'm paying a fee that goes to the miner, and that on the miners choose which transactions to include in blocks according to basically who's paying the most. So it's like, imagine if you had a taxi and you had five potential fares, like an Uber, you're going to pick the fare that's paying you the most. And then there's something called a block subsidy. So the way Bitcoins are distributed is that with each block, a new number of Bitcoins are created and paid to the miner that has mined that block. Right now, the subsidy, the block subsidy is 6.25 Bitcoins per block, and each halving it halves. It started at 50 when Bitcoin first launched, and it halved to 25, then 12.5, 6.25, and now it's going to go down to 3.
Very interesting. And do you have any data on what has happened to the actual price of Bitcoin after these events occurred?
Yeah, so the halving tends to coincide with a run-up in the price. So Bitcoin has these four-year cycles that and the halvings happen roughly every 4 years. And so there is some correlation between price run-ups and halvings. A lot of people see it because it's due to sort of supply shocks of how much Bitcoin comes on the market. Because obviously miners have an expense of electricity, having to buy machines, having to have infrastructure, and their revenue is Bitcoin. So until recently, this still happens now, but until recently, Bitcoin miners weren't able to sort of raise capital from anywhere else. So they relied on the revenue from Bitcoin they mined. They would sell that. And obviously that brings supply on the market and affects the price. If the miners are earning less Bitcoin, that's less Bitcoin they can sell. And that apparently the theory is that the halving is sort of like a supply shock in the Bitcoin market, and it makes the price go up. And I think just, the placebo, sort of the belief of that. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If everyone thinks the price of Bitcoin is going to go up, everyone buys it, creating demand, which pushes the price up.
Very, very interesting. Before we wrap up here, Gandalf, if you wouldn't mind, we have some questions from our Patreon listeners. These are some of our most dedicated listeners that get the opportunity to ask guest questions. I had said we have a mystery guest on to talk Bitcoin and cryptocurrency because cool. I wasn't sure you wanted to be revealed. So first up, Chris Young had asked some of the exchanges that are safer to be in, wallets, et cetera. I think we covered that pretty well. So I'm going to move on to Dan. Dan had asked any hopes or actions that can be taken by folks like Johnny, one of our other co-hosts, who did actually have some coins in Celsius. Any action people can take who had invested with them?
I think, you know, you're going to have to see what's left over at the end of the bankruptcy proceedings. You can't really get money out of somewhere. You know, you can't get any more money back than there is in deposits at Celsius. So, you know, when someone goes bankrupt, even if you sue them for damages or whatever, if they don't have money, they don't have money.
And Ilya K asks, says that crypto feels more like a speculation and money remittance instrument. What would you tell people who have that thought on Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think a lot of cryptocurrency is basically like a casino. It's like a mix of a casino and sports betting, right? People get very tribal about different cryptocurrencies like they do about their sports teams. And you sort of bet on the one you think is the strongest, not necessarily using rational assessment or understanding. It's just because you have some emotional tie to Doge or whatever other crypto. So there is, you know, Ilya's 100% right that there is a lot of just speculating and the people hoping that they're going to hit it big by, you know, buying the cryptocurrency that's going to go up 2000x in the next year or two. In terms of the money remittance, the money remittance statement, that's very true. Bitcoin has a use case, which is because it's money and because it's decentralized and it's, you know, it's the same currency all around the world. It can be used, particularly with something called the Lightning Network, which makes Bitcoin basically instant. It makes you able to transfer Bitcoin basically instantly and for free. It is increasingly being looked at as an interesting tool to fix the world of remittance. So, for example, you know, you have lots of countries that where there's a lot of migrant workers, and Western Union and other such companies will charge some ridiculous fees for them to remit money back home. Bitcoin has an interesting use case in that sphere.
And our last question, are there any good technical indicators that a coin will go up in value aside from a tweet from Elon Musk, which I thought was pretty funny? But we have seen him drive the market a lot too, at least temporarily. They had noted that no one really seems to care about the technological advances that these new coins are making. Is there any actual indicator that would tell you a certain coin is going to rise?
Oh, God, I mean... If you can try to guess, you know, obviously if like Elon Musk tweets about Doge, we've all seen it happen, right? Him tweet about Doge and support Doge. And it's happened with Bitcoin as well. And the price go up, but then it's come straight back down. If the fundamentals aren't there, you know, if people don't care about the technological advancements that are brought about or the technical innovation that Bitcoin brings about, then you are just speculating on some random short-term thing. And in that case, you know, I can't really help you because I don't look at those things. I've tried to understand the technology. I've tried to understand what it means, how it's different to anything else out there in terms of Bitcoin. And I just save in Bitcoin and have a very long time horizon. And I don't care if Elon Musk is pumping Doge or whatever. He pumped Doge to 70 cents and then it's now at 6 cents. So unless you know when to sell the top, which I don't, it's a very hard game to play.
Yeah, I agree. That seems like a waste of time. I have a lot of other thoughts about Elon on Twitter recently, but
yeah, people should concentrate. You know, I would concentrate on investing. Put all that time you might spend in trying to figure out if Elon's going to tweet about Doge or if Mark Cuban's going to accept Doge. You know, just try to upskill yourself. Try to invest in yourself. Try to figure out like how can I generate more income, right? And then you can use that to invest in other places. Don't rely on trying to flip coins or gamble or on all these like short-term moves that are probably going to end up with you wrecked. Like if you learn something, nobody can take that away from you, and that compounds over 10 years. So Don't pay attention to trying to figure out all these little short-term moves so you can make a few bucks here and there. Invest in yourself, learn some skills, upskill yourself, maybe start a business. And that will return a lot more as an investment than speculating on cryptocurrency.
I think that's a great note to go out on. I love that advice. Before we leave, Gandalf, where can listeners learn more about you? And are there any other Bitcoin or crypto resources that you'd like to point people out to? Recently, I want to say about a year ago, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but Saifedean Ammous, he wrote this book called The Bitcoin Standard. That really helped me kind of believe in Bitcoin more. I really enjoyed that book. I'm not sure if there's any other books or resources that you can suggest people to learn about Bitcoin.
Yeah, so absolutely. I think the resources I'm going to share are really to try and hammer home for people the difference between Bitcoin and everything else. So I recommend people go and read a blog post called Bitcoin Not Blockchain by Parker Lewis. This will give you a very good understanding of why a sort of a decentralized blockchain system only makes sense in the application that Bitcoin provides and not for much else, or at least nothing that we've been able to come up with since then. I recommend Preston Pish's podcast. It's called Bitcoin Fundamentals. If you go back to the beginning of that, he covers a lot of like the sort of questions that newbies tend to have around like fears, understanding how Bitcoin works, how it's different. So go listen to the first sort of 1 to 5 episodes of that podcast. And there's a very good video as well called Don't Buy Bitcoin with Simon Dixon and Andreas Antonopoulos. They basically go through, one of them is sort of straw manning arguments, and the other one is steel manning arguments about why you shouldn't buy Bitcoin. And it's very interesting. For that one really helped me when I was first starting out. For people who are more into finance and are more sort of advanced, there's a 52-page essay called Only the Strong Survive by Alan Farrington and Big Al, which talks about the difference between Bitcoin and the whole DeFi cryptocurrency space. That's a brilliant one. And then lastly, the book 21 Lessons by Gigi is fantastic. So that's a lot of meat to chew on. But if you can get through all those resources, I think you'll have a really, really, really good understanding of why blockchain, what the innovation that Bitcoin brought and why it's different to everything else and why everything else doesn't quite make sense.
I love all that. Thank you for those resources. I'll post those in the show notes so our bosses out there can check out that information. And obviously, we want to learn about you too, Gandalf. I think we found each other on Twitter. You want to give a shout out on that? Is that the best place to reach you?
Yeah, Twitter is sort of where I spend a lot of my time. And if I'm ever doing anything else, I'll tweet about it. So you'll find out about it there. So I'm at BTC Gandalf. I also run the account This Is Bitcoin, and I'll be launching a website and doing some of my own writing about Bitcoin on there as well. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, my Twitter is the best place to keep in touch with me.
Awesome. Look forward to all that information. Once again, it's at BTC Gandalf on Twitter. I'll post that in the show notes as well. Gandalf, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and Invest Like a Boss.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sam Bankman-Fried. That either sounds like the name of a genius or someone that runs a Ponzi scheme. I think it was.
Is it these people with three names? Does the third name maybe add some legitimacy?
he's got bank in his name.
That's true.
Which sounds,
who do we have?
More on the scammer side than on the,
you know what?
Side.
That reminds me, previous guests, which we found, I'm not calling it a scam, but we saw some red flags that we posted in Patreon. We had a guest named Sally Outlaw. You remember her?
Ooh.
with Worthy Bonds. And we've seen some financial issues with them as well. So maybe we got to look closer into these names.
Yeah, my gosh. Why don't you stick with like a normal name, like Sam Marks, you know, totally, totally
a normal name.
It forces you to be legitimate. If your name is Sam Bankman-Fried, don't you think, start like go to sleep at night thinking like, how can I pull the cover over the rest of the world's head?
Well, let's talk about some big names involved in FTX. Because this not only brings down Sam Bankman-Fried, and there's their marketing budget was insane. Did you know what their deal was with the Miami Heat? It's an NBA team. What their arena deal was? It was $130 million sponsorship deal. So that should have been concerning right away. Like, what exchange has this kind of money just for one deal?
It's odd though, right? Because it's almost like it wasn't like Madoff where he was just like taking money. I mean, he was basically taking money and spending it on himself, right?
Right.
So the fact that they did a deal with a stadium shows presumably legitimate intent to market the product and develop the product and the brand, right?
And so, a multi-billion dollar sports team should have a team that vets these kind of things to make sure they are legitimate, I would think.
Well, they're getting the paycheck, probably getting asking price for the sponsorship. Maybe they didn't really. And they're not the only ones that have sponsored stadiums, right? There's like crypto.com that I see everywhere.
Yeah, that's Los Angeles now. Here. This used to be called the Staples Center where the Lakers and the Clippers and the Kings play. That was an even bigger deal. I think that was like $200 million. Another thing that FTX was part of, Major League Baseball. They're really in the sports world. Every umpire on a game, they started selling sponsorships on their I guess their uniform, you call it. Mm-hmm. So every umpire on every single MLB game, you would see it on their chest. It would say FTX.
So I'm sure there'll be a documentary at some point when everything and all the stories come out, what they were actually trying to do. It seems like they were just making a big bet on the future of crypto and their exchange. And they're kind of betting the house on it in a sense via debt, because they were taking people's deposits and basically using them as
marketing, I guess.
Cash, yeah. So I liked what was brought up in the interview. It was like, this isn't that much different than what banks do, fractional reserve lending. You know, they're doing the exact same thing. They just probably have better governance and hopefully better ethics and morals. But banks go bust. It's not unheard of to see banks go bust.
Yeah, Gandalf brought up a good point with that too. Like there could be a bank run at any time, and it's really no different than the situation here. It's just that when you dig deeper into this, some of their, like, I don't know if you saw some of their accounting practices. They would like instant message like their boss and be like, "Hey, can I expense whatever it may be," and then the reaction would just be like an emoji. Like that was their accounting practices.
Oh man. Yeah, well, this is really going to be difficult on the crypto community. We'll have to see what shakes out of it, but look, in the time that we've been following this stuff, I got burned at Mt. Gox. FTX has collapsed, a handful of other ones. You know, Johnny at one point, not, he would have looked like the smartest guy in the room because he got out of crypto and he's like, mm-hmm. "I'm not touching anymore." But about 2 years ago, he got out of it. He's like, "I'm not touching anymore. I don't want to lose sleep. I don't, you know, I just don't like it as an investment."
Right.
So he's like, "I'm just out." And then crypto went on this massive run up and everyone's like, "Are you sure you're out? You sure you're out?" He's like, "Yeah, I don't care. I'm out." Well, then lo and behold, like quietly, he put money in Celsius.
Yep.
And then I don't even know the whole story there. It was just like one day we're doing an episode. He's like, "Oh yeah. And like, I just lost $50,000 in Celsius." I'm like, what?
So
how, like, Celsius, when did this happen?
Yep. Celsius went down. I don't know if you saw this morning on Patreon, Sam, another reason to join Patreon. You get this stuff early. Mm-hmm. Johnny made another announcement. Did you see that just a couple hours ago?
No.
So not only did Johnny have money in Celsius, he also had money in BlockFi, which just filed bankruptcy last night.
No way.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
So I think Johnny said he's lost about 5% of his net worth which isn't life ruining, but it's still a large chunk of money.
We're talking about the guy that's got the other 30% of his wealth, maybe more, locked up in Ukrainian real estate right now, where he's living without electricity.
Oh man,
poor guy.
Yeah, as bad as it looks like for us.
How did he pick the two losers of, like, there might be more dominoes to fall. There probably will be, but how did he have money in, like, I've never even heard of these two exchanges.
They were doing like staking and things like that, where you could get these really high return rates, which always seemed too good to be true anyways. And I think Johnny just kind of, I don't know. We're going to have to have him on obviously to talk about it, but so he can speak for himself. But I think it's easy to get caught up in this stuff.
Oh man, kind of like speechless. Yeah, there's gonna be a lot more dominoes to fall here, I think. But aside from like the pain that everyone's in that's lost money in this, sometimes it's good to learn a lesson. And I've enjoyed watching a bit of this crypto wash out, because there's, we talk about it all the time, and you see it a lot in like some places we hang out, like Chiang Mai. It's become basically like a crypto community, and you hear all the, you hear about the shit coins and the scams, and just like, there's just a community of people that are working on bullshit projects, and there's a couple of legitimate ones. And I think people think that they're building something legitimate, because there's interest in people buying it, but not because it's actually solving some type of problem. Like here's a question, a legitimate question. Has there been any technological advancements from this massive concentration of human resources, processing power, etc., since Bitcoin was originally invented in whatever, 2005 or something?
I'm sure there has. I couldn't name them specifically. And I keep hearing about the promise of Chainlink technology and whatever it may be. And I don't know for sure that there really is any advancements.
Yeah, me, I think there's like two things stick out. It was like Bitcoin, boom, drop the mic. Like that was a game changer. And then there was Ethereum and like their smart contracts. But, and then there's been this massive surge of people jumping in to build infrastructure to kind of play off of these and support them. But is anything actually memorable or super usable? Like, has the blockchain technology been utilized across other utilities except for digital money or like Bitcoin itself? I mean, nothing really stands out or sticks, right? So how much of the world's attention has gone to all this stuff, and like how much of it is actually being utilized and put into practice in meaningful projects that are helping the world live more efficiently, et cetera. Like, I think it was 98% Bitcoin, like technology being, and blockchain technology initially being released. And then like everything since then, it's just a shitload of noise.
That's why I liked. That's why I liked what Gandalf had to say about Bitcoin, was it's the only one really not controlled by a corporation. What do you think about the potential of Bitcoin as compared to really any other coin? Because he said he's out on everything except Bitcoin. Like, he's all in.
I guess that's always been my position, except I got stung with Mt. Gox, so I kind of stopped investing at all. Plus, I always knew I had a sizable holding between what was in locked up in Mt. Gox and the other Bitcoin that I had fortunately moved outside of Mt. Gox just before they went bankrupt. So I never played around much with crypto or I mean, I bought a little bit of Ethereum, a little bit of Litecoin, some of the other coins just for fun, but talking like, 10 basis points of like my overall portfolio. Right. So the only other one that I bought recently was just, I had a friend doing a play to earn project, a friend of a friend doing a play to earn project that I thought was really cool. And I did that more to buy land within the game as an NFT. And this stuff for me is more like experiential. It's like, how am I ever going to learn about this stuff? By just reading it. It's like, no, I got to kind of, it's like with all these investments, right? You got to kind of put your money where mouth is and apply a little bit what you enforce yourself to learn through practice. So that's really what it was for me. But nah, I don't think.
If you got some skin in the game, you're going to be a lot more interested in it. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So you said in the intro, you're fully out now. So you just took, you just realized probably considerable losses, and you're like,
I haven't totally calculated the losses yet. It's significant, but speaking, my biggest holding was always and still was until yesterday, Bitcoin. That was probably about 75% of it. And then followed by Ethereum. But then beyond that, I was putting these sell orders in, and I didn't realize how many shit coins I had. I had a lot, but just small amounts. But let me just go through the list. One we talked about that I know you had at one point, I'm not sure if you still do, Axis Infinity.
I sold at the high. That was the one coin that I got in at a good price, and I sold at the high.
Yeah, I remember it like doubled or tripled right away after you got it.
Yeah, what's it now? Down 80%,
$6.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I think I sold it at like 120.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
This one was after we talked to, I'm spacing his name, that We Meta guy. Remember it was like the Zillow for the metaverse, High Street. That was awful. Sushi Swap. That was just one of those kind of, let's see what happens with this. This one that I thought had really good potential, or two of them really, Polygon and Chainlink, because they both had really big corporate investments into them. And it's just, it's like you said, though, the technology just never comes to fruition. So gone. See ya. Shiba Inu, another one just for fun. That's at 0.0000911 cents.
So what can you do? What could you do with that? Could you go buy a coffee with it? Could you send it to
I guess
your
convert it to Bitcoin and then buy a coffee.
Do you accept Shiba?
Litecoin, which I actually did use some Litecoin for a purpose, which you might find funny. So I'm really into like football and NFL, and I like to, just for fun, I do like the sports betting. And in California, it's not technically legal. So you got to do like an offshore site. So all these offshore sites use crypto. So that might be another shady spot that crypto is used in. But they accepted Litecoin. And I was like, oh, I got a pile of Litecoin doing nothing. I'll throw that in there.
So these are all liquidated at this point.
Yep. And the last one, Doge, of course, just thanks to Elon. And now thanks to the loss. Thanks to Elon. So the reason I did this, though, it wasn't just because I was scared and I was going to lose everything. But now that Johnny just made his announcement, too, it kind of freaks me out a little bit. The reason was to do one of the advantages of crypto that we've brought up before is to do tax loss harvesting. So we're coming up on the end of the year. Crypto's down for pretty much everybody, and might as well just take the write off on it. So my plan was to sell all those and then rebuy it all as just Bitcoin. I don't know what you think about that, Sam.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. That was, I forget what episode we realized that on, that there's no
wash sale rule.
No sale rule. That's actually huge. Like, you can massively use that to your advantage. So that's a good idea. I mean, it'll certainly clean up some space in your mind, just not holding all those shit coins. I'm sure, so if one of them goes 5,000x, you'll regret it. But it's
happened so many times to things I've sold or missed on that I'm numb to it now.
Better to have some peace of mind.
So I think that's the play, or just holding it in cash, because I'm trying to make a house deal work here to buy a house, and I need a down payment. So that's potential. But I mean, in the meantime, I don't know. Bitcoin with all this news just looks stable. It's down to 16. It's been at 16 since the FTX announcement. There's been other exchanges dropping since then. This BlockFi announcement last night, it hasn't done anything to it.
So where would you keep your Bitcoin now?
That's the problem, is I had it where I shouldn't have had it. I had it in Coinbase. I guess of all the exchanges that I have, some in Gemini as well. But the majority of it was Coinbase. And of all the exchanges, that seems the safest. It's publicly traded, but I don't know. I mean, are they that safe? It seems like all these exchanges were working with each other, borrowing money from each other and working together. So if you had a percentage of your funds in one of these other ones that collapsed, that's a huge hit to Coinbase as well. You know, they were definitely working with FTX, BlockFi, Celsius, and they haven't publicly revealed. All they do is they send comforting emails to say we're safe, but so did BlockFi, sent the same thing too.
Yeah. I mean, crypto is just never going to become mainstream without it becoming super easy to understand, hold, trade, etc. And there was always a bet that they was going to get there. And I think exchanges like Coinbase that allow you to buy and sell, but also hold, they're publicly traded. You know, they kind of was getting there to a point where like, hey, this is so easy, your mom can do it. Right.
Right.
But then again, that takes away the whole purpose of like Bitcoin and crypto. It's like you want it to be decentralized. You don't want to keep it in a centralized thing. Right. So I just don't I don't know. Like when I just received this coin that I bought for, it was a private coin. It was called Dope Wars. And like the whole process of receiving those coins was so complicated.
Yep.
And I consider myself someone who's like at least kind of with, you know, staying attuned to the industry. And I'm having so many problems like receiving it, like having to understand it, read all these long form documents on like how to get a wallet that supports it, how to add a chain to that wallet that's not supported, then how to add a sub chain, then how to add the coin. Well, there's three other coins that have the same ticker symbol. There's four coins that have the same ticker symbol.
I've noticed like, that on some coins too. Yeah. There's like variants of the same coin.
So basically crypto is still like a web developer, very tech savvy digital currency. That's like a collectible and it's fun and it's interesting, but it's so far away from becoming like broadly utilized and something that people have confidence in and can store with confidence. Like I got the hard wallet. It's in a safe back home. What happens if something happens to me? You think like my parents are ever going to figure out how to get my Bitcoin off of my Trezor wallet? You know,
not a chance.
With my safe, they're going to be reading this document like go forest gun.
You got little clues in like the tree in the backyard.
I mean, come on, man. I mean, even me, like I see these words. And then I got a hot wallet on my computer, a coin, and it's like, I don't even know what happens if my computer gets stolen. How do I get that wallet back? And that, you know, it's like,
I tried to get
things.
That out again.
No
often
confidence.
It still doesn't make sense to me. And honestly, I think that's why it was just sitting in Coinbase. Coinbase made sense to me. I got it. But did you hear what he said, etch it on a piece of metal. I was like, what?
Yeah, I know. I started laughing about that because when Bitcoin was like 60,000, everyone was starting to think about these extreme, like everyone started taking it really seriously.
Yeah.
Started thinking about these extreme measures of like where to put this stuff because it is literally worth so much money. You do like whatever you got to do. But when the price drops significantly, it's like, all right, I'm just keeping my shit in Coinbase.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're going to have more incidents like this in the future. There's going to be more major exchanges that go bust, major hacks and stuff. So I think we have a long, long way to go. Even with Bitcoin, I think this is just rocking people. People are going to get burned. People are going to lose confidence. And big celebrities, stadiums, like they're going to all be very careful about putting their name on this going forward, which is going to take away a lot of the marketing appeal of crypto as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, one funny one, I should post the video. I don't know if you caught it, Sam. During the Super Bowl last year, Larry David, who's from like Curb Your Enthusiasm, created Seinfeld. Love Larry David. He did a commercial. The play was like, they had the wheel. It was like a wheel. And he's in Stone Age times. He's like, that'll never work. And then it was like TV or something. And he's like, no one's going to want that. And then the last thing was like cryptocurrency. And he's like, that'll never work. And then, of course, now it's all blowing up. It was an FTX commercial. I should post that video, though. It's pretty funny. So he was one of the supporters of FTX. Tom Brady and Giselle, which obviously they've had a fun year, not only just a divorce, and now bring that into it.
What do you think when you see the Tom Brady news? Does it secretly make you feel like a little good inside?
A little bit, because it's like
he had such an incredible reign, like married to supermodels, just like in insane football career, like,
and it's
45,
never enough.
45 still looks like he's like 28, like he's better looking and more handsome and a better football player every year. And it's almost like, all right, it is real. Like life is real. And like, no one has a perfect run. Like,
yeah. Like you can get tired of sleeping with a supermodel every night.
Antonio Brown ain't.
Oh God, let's not go there. Tom. He was just in my neighborhood the other day, actually at the Venice skate park. They really went after the athletes too. Steph Curry from the NBA. Mm. Trevor Lawrence. They like these Florida guys. Maybe that's why you were attracted to Bitcoin, Sam. Shohei Ohtani, he's a baseball player.
a lot of scammers and a lot of ignorant people in Florida. That's why.
A Canadian, a guy that I know, I think we both really like. I mean, I'm a big fan of Shark Tank. Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary.
Was he an investor, or what was his role in FTX? Or
he
just
was a
lost
brand
money
ambassador for FTX.
Mr. Wonderful should have known. There's a guy that should have done some real due diligence.
I know. He's still actually, I follow him on socials, and he still really believes in crypto. Obviously not FTX in general, but.
Gosh, this reminds me. I'm so glad that deal with Gemini didn't go through, that I was going to invest in.
Yeah, because they were a big supporter of BlockFi too. So that's going to be interesting how that works out. And I have some coins still in Gemini, and that might be sold today. That's my last of the crypto, but that was just a tiny percentage.
Yeah, all out.
David Ortiz, Big Poppy, baseball player.
Big Poppy. I mean, I'm hearing these names, and like so far, the only one that I would say should have some clue of what crypto and FTX actually were was Kevin O'Leary.
Yeah.
But like, I think of Big Poppy, even Tom Brady, like they didn't understand this stuff, really.
Yeah.
They just bought into the hype.
Well, then we got a guy that's, I think, almost a billionaire now too, but it's on the same vein. Shaq was a big investor with them.
So what do you think is going to happen to this Bankman guy?
So I was looking it up. Like, I was like, why the Bahamas? Because you hear about like Hollywood, like Roman Polanski went to France and they can't touch him there, or Julian Assange type thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why the Bahamas? And I looked it up and I thought, you know, maybe they had a extradition thing, and they really don't. They just said it's tougher. Like the US can, they just have to work with the Bahamian government, but it's like, he's not safe there.
I think the only two places that you're safe is Russia to a degree. I mean, Russia can totally use you.
They can do whatever they want.
Yeah. You bet. Like really probably not Russia. They just won't extradite you by rule of thumb. But my buddy was hiding out in Russia, actually. And eventually, like he was there for a year with no issues. And eventually they just came and nabbed him, and they used him as a pawn to get back some of their Russian prisoners.
That's what they're trying to do with that Brittany Griner, that WNBA player. They wanted some of their Russian gangster guys back, and yeah, they told them no.
They wanted him back, but they didn't want him back to let him free. They want him back to put him in jail there and persecute him.
Right.
So they put this guy I went to college with on a plane back to the U.S. He was free in Russia. They put him back on a plane to the U.S. where he got picked up by police upon getting off the plane and thrown in Brooklyn Max.
I you know what? There's a few times I'd rather be in Russia, but I think over a New York prison, I'll take Russia.
Oh gosh. And then I think Antigua has a no extradition policy, but you know, then you're on this like little shitty island for the rest of your life.
I don't know. These guys that like have unlimited funds and resources, like just to charter a plane and go wherever they want, I think a lot of it's ego. They're just like, no one's going to touch me. Think of like Harvey Weinstein. Like he was just like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here. I bet he wishes today he had hopped on a plane and gone anywhere. It's these guys with these big egos that have always been told they're great, they're amazing, and they've gotten out of everything. I don't think he's getting out of this.
I hope not.
There's too much money involved.
I still want the CEO of Mt. Gox to be taken down.
Do you think if the Mt. Gox was an American company like FTX, it would have been a different outcome?
I don't know, man. Probably.
Well, speaking of that, Gandalf brought it up too, that whenever these Mt. Gox coins come to market, I don't know if you want to talk specifics about how much you're getting or at least percentage. I didn't want to speak for you. I kind of generally knew what you said you were getting, but when those hit the market, if you got an idea of when you're going to get that, do you think everyone's just going to like, it's free money, just get rid of it, I want to cash it out?
Tough to say. I don't think everyone will get it on the same day either. I think it'll be layered probably over several. I mean, based on how they've handled this bankruptcy, things will probably be phased. Payouts probably phased in like over at least a year.
That'd be smart to do it that way.
Yeah. And then I imagine a lot of people, you know, you probably have a split group. I think a lot of people will be like, you know, we're also in a recession now, right? So people want cash. So that a lot of people may sell it. Like for me, I won't sell it because Bitcoin's kind of at the bottom, at least in my view. So see what happens. But I don't know that there's going to be enough volume there that would really tank it further, you know?
Because so, as a percentage, like what percent are you getting back compared to what you lost?
In the end, it should be something around like 15% of the coins that I lost, I'll get back.
So yeah, I'm just wondering if that's indicative of any of these FTX, BlockFi, Celsius people of what they'll get back years from now. Cause it's you're like at least 5 years into this, aren't you?
Mt. Gox was kind of fortunate in that they found what came out to be like a quarter of the coins in a wallet. So I don't know if that's going to be the same situation in Mt. Gox.
And how
FTX.
Does that stuff get lost? Oh, we just randomly found 10,000 Bitcoin.
I mean, I think it was an inside job. It's really tricky, man, because you get these people, these CEOs, and they literally have access to billions of dollars. It's like, you're a good guy, you were raised well, and then all of a sudden people deposit $1 billion into a digital platform that you control, and it's just sitting there and you're looking at it and you have the keys to it. So, I mean, what they did is totally effed, but it's kind of like Tiger Woods, right? Everyone's like, Tiger Woods is such a jerk. What a scumbag. How could he do that? It's like, yeah, everywhere you go,
it was easy. Yeah.
100 amazing models want to go home and sleep with you. You're going to judge that man? Yeah. Put yourself in that position. See what and kind I think of willpower as like, you have.
These pictures are coming out that of this SBF guy. He met every celebrity, every politician. He had photo ops with everybody. And then now people are trying to go back like, look, you were hanging out with this guy. Of course, a billionaire wants to take a meeting with you and you're a senator. You're going to take that meeting.
That's what Bill Gates was saying, because he's got photos with what's the guy?
Epstein, right?
Epstein.
Yeah.
And Bill Gates was in an interview like, you know, the guy's a billionaire and he says he wants to write a big check to my foundation. Am I not supposed to have a meeting with him like before you knew about all this stuff? Yeah, tough stuff.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So I guess we'll find out your Mt. Gox situation. Do you just have a general date? Do they give you a date when you're going to get those?
I think it's supposed to be January. So we'll see.
Right around the corner. Well, I don't know. Sam, final verdict. I'm going to trust you on this. Do I buy back Bitcoin or just call it a loss?
Oof. Why don't you buy back Bitcoin? Because then you're putting the knowledge that we got on this podcast actually into use. Sell it, you're taking the opposite advice. You're selling at the bottom, you're realizing losses. If you do the wash sale, you're applying some good knowledge.
Yeah, and I'll still get the write-off either way.
That's right.
So, okay. All right. I like that. Yeah. Don't panic sell. I like that. This wasn't a panic sale because I knew it was a tax thing. If it had been not tax advantageous, I would have just left it. But that's the reason for selling it. And I had always intended to buy it back. But then after all this news today, I was like, do I? So,
luckily, you're a Patreon, Derek, because if you didn't, you might have sold today, transferred the money to blockchain tomorrow or BlockFi tomorrow, and bought Bitcoin had a really shitty end to the year.
The day before it goes bankrupt.
I think we started this. I think we did an episode in January. We'll have to go back and listen. We're like, this year hasn't exactly started out that well. And you and I both named like three shitty things that happened in the first like 2 weeks of the year. We're like, oh, maybe that's a... hopefully not the trend for the year, but it's been a rocky one.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're gonna have, you know what, that's what makes it fun though, this up and down stuff. If it just goes up all the time or goes down all the time, it's not as exciting. I like the roller coaster of it.
fun to lick the wounds every now and then, and we'll use that as a segue to go into this Patreon exclusive metaverse portfolio update that we're about to record.
Yeah, so if you guys are listening to this episode right now, Sam and I's Patreon episode is live in there immediately, so you can check that out. Investlikeaboss.com, click on Become a Patreon. Plan start as low as $5 a month. We just did our mastermind call too. There's lots of good stuff going on out there, as bad as it may seem. Some takeaways from that. A lot of people are shifting to real assets and more safer plays. Real estate still seem to be in play. A lot of people mentioned that if they're renting, their rent was up. I know one Patreon saw his rent go up 30% this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's steep. And take a look at some online savings accounts now. Some of the ones that we talk about a lot, like Marcus, saving liquid savings accounts back up to 3%, which is doesn't hold a candle to 11% inflation, but it's better than zero. So makes you feel good when you can go buy yourself a cheeseburger at the end of the month.
Totally. Lots of good options out there. All right, Sam, let's record this Patreon episode. Our next episode of Invest Like a Boss, crazy to think about it, is going to be our last episode of 2022. So look forward to that coming soon.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.